could travel.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ann Koppel, and I am a member of Host to Host. And I want to personally thank Amanda Fritz. I wrote all of the council members, and she was the only one that responded and held a conversation with me. And I can see she took my comments to heart because she's represented those comments to the council. Thank you, Amanda. I list
I have to say I didn't get to everybody's because we got literally over 300. But I do appreciate especially folks like you who took the time to send your own thoughts in. Thank you.
I list two of the bedrooms in my home in the Sunnyside neighborhood on Airbnb, and I'm concerned about the impact of the proposed additional SDR taxes. And I also ask you to consider delaying your vote until you've considered all the voices in this matter. I'm 72 years old, and my husband and I are fully retired, and we've been living in our home and neighborhood for 31 years. In 2010, we created an ADU in our basement, and we use this as a long-term rental. But that income only covers the mortgage and property taxes. The Airbnb income is crucial for us to remain in our home. Without that income, or even with less of that income, we would have to sell and move. We would not rent those bedrooms as long-term rentals, and not because of convenience, but because they just won't bring in enough income for us to maintain an old home. So we also attract budget travelers, and to address Commissioner Fish's concern, my concern is that the $4 per night fee is going to bump our fees up, which run around $55 to $65, so that they'll look for places outside the Portland tax district and commute that into Portland. We do favor additional taxes, but we ask that the flat fee be changed to a percent fee to have less of an impact on those of us at the low end of the rental market. And I just want to say very briefly that my home is more than just a home. You could say, well, sell it. It's worth a lot more now. But this is my community. And a study published in,
Thank you. Appreciate
it. We were working on 3 minutes, and so that's why it's a little bit short.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Rachel Harris, and I'm part of Host to Host and a super host. My husband and I have lived over by PCC, Sylvania, for over 42 years. I worked in social services and public services where I was forced to retire early at 62 because of multiple and serious health conditions. Instead of going on disability, though, we turned our son's room into an Airbnb space. We start at the low end about $60, $65. And it helps us meet not only on our limited income, but it helps us do things like we put in solar energy. So improvements as we want to age gracefully in our home, in our community. We're active in the neighborhood association. We often use all of our neighbors, use us for their short-term needs for their family members. I'm also a Multnomah County Democrat PCP and a CD5 committee member. And we also hire people to help us because of our limits. And we pay a living wage to the people that help us ground keep. So affordable housing is a concern shared by all of us. And we want to state that we, too, are the cross-reference of the demographics. 69% of hosts who use Airbnb do so to afford staying in their home. 8% avoided foreclosure and eviction. 12% of hosts are over the age of 60. And in our neighborhoods, they aren't affordable rents anyway. So not only would we not be adding to the problem, people can't rent affordable rents in our areas anyway. And we just don't want to be vilified and lumped in to the larger groups that misbehaved.
Thank you.
Mayor, could I just comment on
Commissioner Fritz.
What Ms. Harris said? That I live near PCC Sylvania as well, and I think what you have just illustrated is I had been thinking of places like Selwood, perhaps North Tabor, Multnomah, which are kind of vibrant, walkable places. in your particular instance, people would look to Mountain Park or to Tigard's to, because it's not that walkable or there's not that much to do in our neighbourhood. Okay. So I think that for your particular instance, that's made me think about what would the impact be on businesses that are actually on the outskirts. So thank you for testifying.
Next three, please. Thank you.
Are Shannon Hiller-Webb, Debbie Hertert, and Anne-Marie Clare. And then we'll go with Star Erickson, Terry Russinow, and Dennis Frengel.
Good morning.
Morning. I'm Shannon Hiller-Webb, and I'm really here to say thank you for doing the good work, and we really appreciate being able to present and share our thoughts as hosts. I'm here to actually just clarify some of the cleanup of maybe stuff that got lost a little bit in our previous testimony. One of the things that
Just a little closer to the mic so we can all hear you.
One of the things I just wanted to make clear is that we felt like the ordinance had a guide for once it's adopted in how you provide public awareness to they have adequate time to respond. And if it's in the ordinance, we felt like the ordinance should have been given the same burden that we had only 4 days to gather and put this testimony together. And in all volunteer nature, we worked tirelessly to present something to you worth consideration. So I just want to make that point. And then we would have also had time to seek a little bit more expert opinion, because we really do want to present ourselves as a formal entity that can really inform the good work you're doing. And that's pretty much all I needed to clean up. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shannon.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Debbie Hertert. We moved to Portland in 1976 to start a family, and we live in the first house we ever purchased for now over 40 years. As chair of Host to Host, I want to say that hosts are proud of Portland being a leader in this industry and of being the first U.S. city to create legislation around short-term rentals. Host to Host is also a first in the nation, being the first trade association for hosts. Our foundation is built on community, education, and advocacy. We really appreciate the time afforded us today to convey our thoughts and have our voices heard. We truly hope the city recognizes Host to Host as a committed partner and stakeholder in the city proceeds in addressing affordable housing concerns and legislation around short-term rentals. To summarize, our recommendations are: 1, postpone the taxation implementation until data is gathered through the new pass-through legislation. 2, move forward with the pass-through registration that will eliminate the unlicensed commercial hosts. 3, involve hosts in discussions as stakeholders in drafting both pass-through and taxation legislation. Host to Host is committed to be a valuable partner to the city and its host constituents. In the event the taxation ordinance moves forward, we hope that you will consider the following. 1, assess taxes equitably and include hotels under 50 rooms in the same tax burden. 2, remove the per-day assessment and apply a small percentage increase to TLT to all Portland accommodations. This fair approach will help protect the city from a drop in revenue that may occur as commercial operators or short-term rentals are removed. 3, provide fair representation with Travel Portland to include metric-driven, equitable marketing for short-term rentals, as well as host representation on the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning.
My name is Anne-Marie Clare. I am a longtime 40-year resident. I raised my daughter within the Portland School District and have volunteered on many community activities throughout the years. I am a retired librarian on a fixed income who votes for and pays for taxes to support schools, parks, and affordable housing, along with other city, county, and metro services. Each year, my property taxes increase while my income does not. I am already working a part-time minimum wage job to help pay for expenses related to my home. I'm doing all of my yard work except for hiring arborists to prune my 5 trees, which I can no longer do myself. My home was built in 1926, which requires other maintenance and upgrades as well. As a single woman homeowner, I rely on room rental income to cover these expenses and to remain in my home. Since my home has only one bathroom, it is difficult to host a long-term rental. However, I welcome hosting travelers for shorter visits and family and visitors as well. My home is in a well-established, safe neighborhood within walking distance of parks, schools, and small markets. I keep brochures on hand of local cafes and businesses to promote economic activity in a neighborhood, not in a conventional travel corridor. I feel that the council has an opportunity today to gather more complete data before making a ruling on additional taxes for homeowners such as myself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The next three are Star Erickson, Terry Russinow, I believe is the last name, and Dennis Fringle. And they'll be followed by Tamara Kodut, Darlene, I believe it's Limbard.
As long as you don't think it's a sham.
And Laura Angius.
Have a seat.
Well, I'll reserve my judgment.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for hearing us. I don't have much to add. I just wanted to provide a variety of voice as a stay-at-home mom. Airbnb provides me to stay home with my children. And also, we live in an old home in Northwest Portland. It's 1966, and it needs lots of repairs. We're paying 20% of our mortgage costs. It goes to property taxes. And so this $4 charge is significant to the small nightly fee that we provide for budget travelers. Also want to mention that a lot of our travelers are our neighbors. Sometimes we get guests from Northeast Portland who just don't want to travel as far to go to PCC where they're working or they're going to school. Also neighbors whose homes were flooded. We've even had people that were living in a car in the wintertime and they just needed a warm place to stay for a week or something. So please consider that as maybe changing it to a more of a percentage rate as opposed to the $4 flat rate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Give us your name, please.
Yes, Star Erickson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Let's see if I can. Hi, I'm Carol Wiles, and I grew up in Portland. I've been a short-term rental host for 7 years. I feel like I'm an ambassador for the city that I grew up in. I want to say, if you really care about affordable housing, please help us stay in our homes. The short-term rental industry is predominantly a women-run, women-worked business. 68% of the hosts in Portland are women, and the fastest-growing demographic is seniors that need to be able to stay in our homes. Like I said, I'm one of those hosts. I provide an affordable place to stay. This tax and fee will do economic damage. It will disproportionately affect people who travel that are low income and on a budget. So what happens to me, I've already had to drop my price $10 a night to get any business in the high season in Portland. Adding $4 a night will begin to make it, once again, before Airbnb and short-term rentals came along, possible for only the affluent to travel. Many people come to Portland because they can find cheap places to stay. They're going to go to Boise if they can't. So, let's see, what else? So I'm not trying to avoid paying the tax. I'm trying to bring to light the fact that we already have been paying directly into the Affordable Housing Fund. When I contacted the city 2 years ago, I was told by city staff that the over $2 million a year was going into the Affordable Housing Fund from just Airbnb tax alone. At that point in time, no other platforms were paying into it. It's now two years later. There's twice as many hosts, so I'm assuming that price is up to $4 million a year that I was told was going directly into the Affordable Housing Fund. So please help us stay in our homes.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Dennis Frengel, and we have a two-bedroom ADU that we rent out. And we've done this for 8 years. I want to read you something from a Fortune magazine issue of August 3rd, 2015, talking about cost of travel. And it talks about taxes. And it says, while this study doesn't chart the rise of taxes over time, it does pinpoint the hot spots for travel taxes in the United States. Topping the list is Portland. The average traveler to the city of Roses pays $22 a day in taxes, the research found. It's closely followed by Boston, $19, and Indianapolis, $18. And the lowest areas, would be Burbank, California, $2, Orange County, California, $3, and Ontario, California, $4. About 22 states levy a specific statewide tax on lodging, ranging from as low as 3% to as high as 13% of the price of a night's stay at a hotel or motel. This is 3 years ago. Oregon is now 13.3%, and what we're talking about here is raising it up to 15.3% plus the $4 a night. So that's when the fella said that we're close to the top, we're at the top, and we're going to be way over the top. And that impacts our guests. We, with a two-bedroom ADU, specifically cater to families that can't afford to go to hotels. And we have seen over the years, we have seen when we had to add, we 2 years ago, once you legalized ADUs, we immediately became registered, licensed, and started collecting the taxes.
Thank you.
What we saw with that 13.3% was the number of families declined that came here.
Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Huh?
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Forget what that little thing is.
Sorry. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Next three, please. Carla.
First, was there a Terry Resinon or Resinow?
So she left.
Oh, thank you. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
The next three were Tamara Kodut, Darlene, I believe it's Zimbard, and Laura Angus, or Angius. And they'll be followed by Rose Bergen, Mark Zell, or Saltvite, thank you, and Gary Fallos. So right now we're looking for Tamara Kodut, Darlene Zimbard, and Laura Angus.
Good morning.
Hi. Just me. I'm Laura Angus. I live in Northwest Portland, Nob Hill area, and I've been a super host for 2 years now, and I'm a member of the organization Host to Host. The comment earlier about us not about the affordable housing being the same, that's not my situation. I'm more like the hotel. I do have the transient people. And so I don't see the comparable. I think, you know, if I had time to prepare and think about it, I might have come up with stats that said how much of Airbnb is actually, you know, transient, like you said, where people are looking for a hotel stay. I meet them. I never let anyone in. It's my dining room that I turned into an Airbnb. My in-laws had visited, and they had a walker, and I thought, I need them to be on the main floor. And so I turned it into a bedroom, and then they left, and I thought, well, what the heck? I'm an empty nester now. And I invite people in our home, and I meet every one of them, and I talk to them like a concierge would, right? 15 minutes, 30 minutes, we become friends. I tell them all about the businesses. I tell them all the places to go. And they go and do what I say. They come back and tell me all about it. And they have a great experience. And so I do kind of compare it to a hotel, but it's the true Airbnb thing. I mean, we connect. We exchange. Some people are still on my Snapchat. We exchange. We build a friendship. And so I have somebody coming from Argentina tonight, you know. It's really interesting for me, and I meet people from all over. And I just think the comparison, like I'm not taking a short short-term housing place away. I wouldn't offer that room as a long-term thing. So anyway, that's just my situation. So Airbnb is an all-encompassing ADUs.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your testimony. Next three, please, Carla.
First, was there Tamara Kodut on Southeast 45th or Darlene Zimbard on 62nd? Then we'll go with Rose Bergen, Mark Saltvet, and Gary Fallos. They'll be followed by Beth Fernandez, Sydney Mead, and Paul Dagey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you want to go ahead and start?
I'm Rose Bergen, and I've been a super host for about 3 years. I love it. I have people come from all over the world. Amanda responded to me, too. And so I didn't hear from anybody else, but I sent you all emails. So I agree with everything that everybody said. You know, Portland's at the highest. I don't interfere with the long-term rentals at all. I wouldn't do it. But the one thing that hasn't been addressed is homelessness. And I dealt with the homeless brother who died on the streets. And, you know, I think that I would like to just point out that the more my brother, the faster he could use it toward his own demise. The faster he could use it toward his own demise. And so sometimes if we become a magnet community, because they look for it. They know Salt Lake City is good. They know San Francisco is good. If we become a magnet community to draw people like that to us, I live in close in Northeast. I'm already picking up trash every day, blankets, smelly stuff that you wouldn't want to touch. I put it in trash in my trash bags. You know, we're a community members. We live in our homes. We care about our neighborhoods. We take care of our neighborhoods. We know the people living next to us, behind us, across from us. We take care of each other. I'm not the only one who does this. Lots of people do this. You know, you don't want to drive us out because we can't afford to stay in our homes by taking away this opportunity of Airbnb, because you drive out community members who take care of their communities, who care about people in our community. Plus, I direct everyone to local businesses and blah, 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 just like everybody else. So we contribute a lot to this, and to put extra burdens on us is going to drive down, you know, maybe even what you get in taxes. So take a look at that. Ma'am, I agree with holding off on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ma'am, let me, I'm just compelled to respond to the comment you made about the fact that when we invest in homeless services, we put the welcome mat out. We do a...
I would love to be on a committee for that, incidentally, but go ahead.
We'd be happy to have you. I don't run homelessness, but the mayor, I'm sure, would be very happy to have you. We do an annual street count, and we collect data on who's, and so we have pretty good data about who's on the sidewalks. We know that most people are experiencing mental health crisis or addiction.
Absolutely, that's exactly right.
But we also know that most people are homegrown and they're not moving here. So for as long as we've been doing this work, there's been this idea that if we invest in solutions, we're just putting the welcome mat out. And I just want to assure you that that's not the case, and the data doesn't support that. If it turns out that some homeless people come here because they think we're a compassionate community, they're coming for the same reason that a middle-class family comes here, because they want to go to good schools, or because an affluent family comes here because they want to have a nice quality of life. But in the main, our data does not support the welcome mat theory, so I just wanted to put that on the record.
Yeah, I'd like to do more research on that. I know that my brother was very aware of communities that were more open to it, and I think that that's a general rule within the community of homeless people. Yeah. So I think that that does influence it, even though the data may not show that.
Well, I'm sorry about your brother's experience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Good morning.
Hello, my name is Mark Saltvet. I was born in Portland, and I've lived in Northwest Portland basically my whole life. In fact, I think my brother John went to high school with Mayor Wheeler.
Yes, he did.
My wife and I are recent empty nesters, and we very much need the money we get from Airbnb to make ends meet. because we're basically old school, arty, low income Portlanders of the kind you don't see much anymore. I'm a freelance writer and stand-up comedian. I used to work on indie films in town. In fact, Commissioner Udaly used to sell my palindrome zine in her store, Reading Frenzy. Miriam Wolf says hi. My wife is a Latinx or Latinx theater activist who worked at the Miracle Theater, Teatro Milagro, here in town for 15 years and is now in graduate school so that she can teach students about Latinx theater, which many honestly don't even know exists. So I think there's a misconception that has not been addressed here today, and that is the idea that somehow people are like little hoteliers, or hoteliers, however you say that. As you probably know, there is a rule. You cannot get a license in Portland unless you live in the house. This isn't like other cities, and with all due respect, Commissioner Fish, that's why your studies don't hold water, because in other cities, people just buy up a bunch of condos and rent them out absentee. We are exactly the kind of people this measure is designed to help.
Let's be clear on that.
Yes.
One of the things that makes it difficult for us to quantify our data is that 80% of the hosts are not in compliance with city law.
Well, and honestly,
let me say that again.
Okay,
80% of the hosts in the city of Portland have not gone and gotten the requisite license and inspection, the minimum that we require.
Well, so, shouldn't our focus then be the city enforcing that? Those people are illegal competitors to us. They are stealing our money. Talking to you today.
80% includes Airbnb, HomeAway, and all the platforms, sir. It's not limited.
Well, let me offer my services as someone who researches books and is good with databases. I would be happy to help you crack down on unlicensed short-term rental people, and I have some specific ideas how to do so.
If I could just add to this, because I actually have the bureau that's responsible for the inspections and enforcement, because the short-term rental platforms have refused to share their host information, it is virtually impossible for us to enforce, and it would be incredibly expensive. So if you're worried about a $4 a day extra charge now, you need to consider, we would need to recover the cost of enforcement.
It would be expensive to enforce your rules?
Absolutely. No, it's not ridiculous. How do you think we would prove that we don't have the address, number one? We're not provided. Okay, I'm not interested in feedback from the audience. That's not how this works. Please be quiet. I'm talking to this gentleman. Soon they will share that information with us due to the settlement, and enforcement will be a lot easier.
Good.
But the fact is we do have hundreds of people with illegal short-term rentals on the market across all the platforms.
Well, I think you can be rest assured that the people who showed up today are the ones who got the licenses and are playing by the rules. And I think I speak for all of us in saying we would love to see that crackdown. And I will, as poor as I am, I will volunteer my services. There's a specific database field in the Airbnb. I'm on the inside. I see the other end of the platform, right? I can tell you the field where you're supposed to put in your city license number. It's as quick as a database search, null the enforcement, bam.
We should talk. We've had some very interesting conversations.
I would love
Airbnb.
To.
Good. That's great. Good. Thank you.
So one final note, if I may. I would like long-term the city council to address the issue of the vanishing of SROs, which I think is really an underlying factor. I don't know what the new generation of SROs will be, but there needs to be something, and I'm pretty sure it's not tiny houses. But if you look at the hotel industry, things like the Crystal Hotel, Ace Society Hotel, those are all converted rental apartments that were converted into boutique hotels.
Yeah, hey, specific to that, and thank you, Mark, for your testimony. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like Commissioner Udaly will definitely take you up on your offer, so thank you for offering.
Drop off
but
the card.
With regard to SROs, I just want you to know, with the affordable housing levy that the people of the city passed in 2016. That also includes a component of that, and part of that is going to be to secure existing SROs that are in pretty awful condition and preserving those for the long term, which means we'll have to make some investments. But you're absolutely right. When we get to the vision that Commissioner Fish and others have been talking about around permanent supportive housing, that's a critical component of the infrastructure investment. So I just wanted to acknowledge that you're right.
Fantastic, and thank you very much for the dialogue. I appreciate
you
that.
You bet. Thank you. Say hi to John for me, too.
I will.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Are Beth Fernandez, Sidney Mead, and Paul Dagey, or Dagey, and they'll be followed by John, I believe it's Wonker, Tom Leah, and Mary Ann Casson.
Good morning.
Good morning. My guests are adventurers and musicians, young elopers. They're new grandmothers, parents of college students, photographers at weddings, hikers, lovers of beer and weed and food grown in our neighborhoods. And my guests can't pay $250 a night for a hotel. They come here and they spend their money for $65 a night on their honeymoon. They come back. They move here. They love our town. They love our neighborhoods. And this is a penalization for not having money, the very thing that we're against in this town. So I hope you'll consider that you are actually penalizing the people with the least. I don't open my home because I want to. I do it because I have to. I don't think anybody does. So consider that, too, another penalization for the people in this town that have the least. So please consider that.
Thank you.
Could you please give us your name?
Beth Fernandez.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Hi, my name is Sydney Mead. I'm with Habitat Property Management. We are a very small, local, family-run property management firm that helps support short-term rentals with housekeeping and reservation services. What I find is that our clients are mainly single women who are using the short-term rentals to supplement their income to age in place. These are expensive times in the city of Portland, and a lot of people are struggling to be able to afford to live in this city. One of the things that I'm really challenged with on this particular proposal is really the timing. As you can see, the industry has completely shifted to from what it was 10 years ago. It is great. Travel Portland is great. And working with the board and hoteliers to come up with a proposal and not get the contributions from folks that are working in the short-term rental industry with the Airbnbs and the HomeAway and all the other home share programs, that doesn't work. You need to get their voices in. As you can see, it's a completely different type of market and business model than a hotel. So I would urge a delay on the vote until you can get those voices into the conversation.
Ma'am, I have just a quick question.
Sure.
Are your clients exclusively single-family homes and condos?
No, most of my clients have ADUs. You mean do they live in single family homes?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they're people that have single family homes. They either rent out a unit in their home or in an accessory dwelling unit.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Good morning. Oh, sorry. You already testified. I appreciate it.
It was
thank
so
you.
Good. He wanted sorry. To hear it again.
Sorry, Carla. The next three, please.
Are John Wankel, I believe it is, Tom Leah, and Mary Ann Casson. And they'll be followed by Alana, I believe it is, Sear, Deb Grant, and Sean McLeod.
Good morning.
Morning. So I'll start then?
Please.
Okay, my name's Tom Lee, and I came down here as a drop-in mostly just to represent. Some of the decisions that are being made lately here by the City Council affect me directly, and I thought, well, I'd come down and introduce myself and kind of explain the type of person that these decisions are affecting, and obviously other people beat me to that. So I'm a small-time landlord. I own two low-income houses out in Forest Grove and a very small house in Southeast Portland. and I'm about to spend my retirement to build a small attachment to my house to what I was going to hope to Airbnb. The reason why I wanted to come down here is because I felt like I'm being unduly targeted. I grew up here in Portland. I went to Metropolitan Learning Center, downtown Portland. Low income my whole life, so I've lived paycheck to paycheck. And as you get older, I didn't set out to buy these small houses that I own. It just sort of evolved that way. I lived in one, got married, moved out. I was trying to help another person buy a house, which is how I ended up with the two units in Forest Grove. I feel like people get to the place where most of the people are here representing. Simply by living in one place long enough, you acquire. So I've lived paycheck to paycheck my whole life up until about now, when I'm finally doing, you know, fairly well. But I'm doing fairly well because I have three small rentals and about to do an ADU. Without that, I don't think I'd be doing very well. I'd still be living paycheck to paycheck. So the decisions that you're making affect people like me, who've, you know, we're not hoteliers, we're not upper income. And if I could charge more for rent, I would. So when a fee is added, it actually does come out of, you know, my pocket. It's not something that, if I could charge more, I would be doing it. So
thank you.
Can I just ask you about that? Because the assumption on these additional charges is that there is an ability for a host to pass them on to the guest. What? And so we're talking, I guess, we're speculating about whether the market will bear that. What I've heard from a number of people is that they are charging rates which significantly are below the hotel industry. So you're getting the benefit of being in a neighborhood and at home with a caring guest, a caring host, at a significant discount. And I can tell you that as someone who sometimes travels with my family, it's just impossible for us to afford to go to a hotel.
Yeah.
So the question is, What evidence do you have that the $4 can't be passed on to your...
I don't. A lot of what I'm doing here is learning. But for instance, I do have a small rental. I have three. I charge $795 for a two-bedroom rental. If I could charge $895, I would. So if a fee was going to be added on to that, it would be coming out of my pocket. So the rental market for ADUs here through Airbnb, I can only speak to you as a low-income traveler. I stay at Airbnbs when I travel to Olympia or San Juan Islands or something because I can afford $65 a night, not $150.
Thank you,
it's significant.
Thank you.
Mary Ann, you're here because you want to see the $4 dedicated to parks, not housing?
You guessed it.
Pardon me?
You guessed it, yes. No. I actually am an Airbnb host myself, have been from the day it was legal. One of the most exciting things I heard was perhaps some renewed commitment to getting compliance, because I've certainly noticed I also cater to budget travelers. There are people that are patients of families at OHSU, et cetera. Business has definitely gone down, so I fully support the goals that you're trying to meet. No question, those are both worthy, but I believe that by lumping the people that are renting out a single bedroom in their own house is different than the Pearl condos where nobody's there. So I think there's a more nuanced discussion that has to take place about who we're targeting and why, and what how that aligns with the goals. The second reason I stayed, despite everybody else saying the things I would have said, has to do with process. If it weren't for Host to Host, I wouldn't have known this was happening today. You obviously have all my contact information. I pay every fee that there is, and yet I received no notice that this was happening. So I think the process can be improved upon. I'm glad to see Host to Host is picking up that role of speaking for those of us that are so disparate across the city and probably hard to target. But those of us who are legal, we're doing it right. We'd like everybody to do it right. It is not a level playing field today.
Thank you. And
could you put your name into the record,
please?
Mary Ann Casson. Thank you.
I want to comment on and second what you said about communication and outreach. There's a broader community conversation that needs to take place about how government and the public communicate. The reality is we communicate through a myriad of means. Of course, we have a free press in this community that also covers these issues, and I know there's been discussion. But on almost every issue that comes before this council, whether it's large and controversial or whether it's small and somewhat pro forma, we hear this refrain that I just heard about it yesterday because somebody called me or somebody emailed me. And for me, as the mayor of this community, it is alarming. And so, you know, we are going to have to work together as a community to figure out what is the right place. Where is the interface between us and the public? We cannot rely on the media to do this for us. But similarly, posting things the way we are legally required to, it doesn't work. We don't have a newspaper of record, per se, the way it would have been posted in the past. We have lots of different options and outlets. And I would be very interested in host-to-host thoughts and perspectives on how we might improve that process, because it comes up a lot. And I'll just say, I don't have the immediate answer, but it is of concern to me, and I know it's of interest to all of us here.
In this particular case, it occurred to me that outreach could have happened because those of us with permits, there's a database somewhere. You've got our names. You've got our contact information. We renew our permits. So specialized case here.
Yeah, it's fair. And I appreciate. And I just got back from the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and this is a conversation we're all having in an era of lots of information that is highly fragmented.
Right.
How do we actually connect with the public in a meaningful way prior to these things getting to the council chamber? So I appreciate your comment. Thank you both. Next three, please.
Our Olana Sear, I believe it is, on Winchell Street. Deb Grant and Sean McLeod. And then the last two will be Chris Smith and Mary Sipe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you want to go ahead and start for us?
Okay.
Thank you.
I also come with a concern about my guests. I feel that that it just keeps getting higher and higher. And
what's your name?
My name is Deb Grant. I'm a host in the Southeast Portland area on Belmont. And at 13.3%, it feels high if you go up to the 15.5%. And then, of course, the guests are also, I understand, you and everyone knows, they're paying like 12% also with the Airbnb fees or the VRBO fees. And I understand that doesn't really need to enter into this conversation. But what I mostly came with a couple of big questions. It does feel like the burden seems inordinately to be landing on lodging. It was very interesting to hear about all the work that's been done with tourism in the city. And I'm wondering why the restaurants aren't taking on a little bit more of this burden regarding the tourism money. It just feels that the guests that I have who are traveling more on a budget, you know, they don't have a ton of money to be going out to the restaurants necessarily, but if they had more money, they would. I guess I'm trying to understand the restaurants are also benefiting from a lot of the tourism that's being brought into Portland. Are they helping as well to pay for some of the TID? This meeting here has been very helpful for me to understand some more about the fees versus the taxes. But to add the $4 per night and the 2% on top of the 13.3% that we're already looking at, it just feels punitive in a way and a little inordinately put on the lodging industry.
So can I just say I very much appreciate you bringing the restaurant industry into the conversation. Israel Bayer, ex of Street Roots, proposed a while ago that just as a concept that we add a charge to a cup of coffee as a way of creating additional resources to deal with people on our streets. As you know, voters in Oregon have overwhelmingly and repeatedly rejected a sales tax that could be the third leg of the stool that particularly is helpful with visitors, because visitors are used to paying a sales tax in many other cities at the airport or when they're visiting a downtown. We don't have either tool. I think it's a very good question, though, to pose what can other entities that are part that benefit from tourism, and we heard from Jeff earlier that, you know, Portland's doing really well on tourism. In fact, one of the things you know from our budget is we're seeing year-to-year record revenues in terms of people coming here. So that's a good thing. People are coming here because we've got the world's attention, and hopefully they're spending money here. But what is the role of the hospitality industry, including, you know, restaurants, in helping address these questions? And I think you pose a very important question.
Yeah, I think it leaves out some of the travelers who really are traveling more on a budget. I see many of them bulking when they see the 13.3% plus, you know, there's other fees. And I sincerely, and I see when we clean up after they leave, they've been out buying things in the stores. They're really, and they don't have very many options in Southeast Portland on where they can stay. The hotel situation in Portland isn't plentiful in some of these neighborhoods. Most of the people that I get are there to visit family or explore the Portland neighborhoods, and they really do go out. They go to the restaurants, they go to the shops, they do all that. I just feel that this is, it just feels so excessive now. It's starting to really feel punitive, landing too much on one entity and not being spread. Just, I've even had to tell guests when they saw some of the fees or the taxes, the price, you know, added on to the actual nightly. And I say, well, we don't have sales tax in Portland, you know, that'll help. But when they're living, they're traveling on a budget, they're trying to just make their own food, do what they can, that doesn't make a big difference to them. I concern.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
You mentioned the 12% Airbnb portion. If a room is listed for $100, does the guest pay $112 so they pay the $12 to Airbnb, or do you get $88?
The guest pays the $12. If it's $100, they pay the $12. So basically they're ending up paying already about 25% more with every stay. And then, I mean, also adding a nightly fee, I see more and more guests really, I just feel like it's really pushing to their limits. I wonder if they're going to have to start at some point to question whether they come to Portland or maybe visit somewhere else. I sincerely do. I think we're really pushing a limit here. And it's more of a feeling.
Thank you.
Know?
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good morning.
Yes. Hi. My name is Sean McLeod. I'm a longtime Portland resident, grew up here, and been fortunate enough to live here for over 40 years. I have an Airbnb, which I rent out of my house. I also have some long-term rentals in Northwest Portland. I've been fortunate enough to live in a number of other places for a period of 8 years, and I moved back to Portland in 1994. And the reason why I moved back to Portland in 1994 is because I realized just what a great place this is to live. And I heard a lot of conversation and justification for the increase of the tax due to affordable housing and the housing crisis that exists in Portland. And that is for sure an issue and something that we need to address. However, I feel like it needs to be done in an equitable way. And putting an additional tax on already transient taxes that is already, I think, the highest in the country, or close to the highest in the country, I think is an unfair way to do it. And actually, the real issue that Portland faces, which is a good issue, a good problem to have, is that people want to come here. They want to live here. This is a great city. It started in the 70s when we put together the urban growth boundary and we tried to control growth and make this a great place to live. So I guess I just really feel that the $4 a night is unfair, unequitable, and I would be in opposition to that. And then the other thing I'd like to say is I've heard a lot of talk about facts, I guess, that have been referenced by Commissioner Fish and New Daily, and I was namely around the research that vacation rentals are impacting affordable housing. I would like to ask that information be made public.
I never referenced vacation rentals.
No, okay.
So if you're talking, there's different segments of the market. The concern I have, and maybe I misspoke, is taking long-term rentals off the market and converting them to short-term rentals. And when this council many years ago legalized this practice. We actually had a lot of landlords who came forward and said, I'd be a fool not to convert my long-term rentals into short-term rentals because I can make a ton more money. So that's actually been acknowledged by the landlord community and well-documented in other cities. I don't actually have the same concern, sir, about
I apologize for saying vacation rental. People who have a vacation home
can choose to rent it or not, and that's it's a different.
No, I meant to say short-term rental. I apologize for that. So what I'm really asking is if you could share that data, where you're saying that short-term rentals are negatively impacting.
I'd be happy to. It's in the Wall Street Journal. It's at the Harvard housing
some
study.
Specific facts, because there's a number of things that affect, housing crisis, and short-term rentals are not the only one. So the question is, what percentage of the housing crisis is impacted by short-term rentals versus other things?
Thank you.
Good question. If you could leave your email with my office, and I'll send you the materials we have.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The last two are Chris Smith and Mary Sipe.
Very good. And I will remind people we are not actually taking the vote on this item today. It is a non-emergency ordinance, so I just want to be very clear about that.
Mary, you get the last word.
Good morning. I like having the last word. My name is Mary. My name is Mary Sipe. And I want to say I support this, and I'll give you a lot of reasons why. We're talking about $4. We're talking about $4 that these people, these guests, would pay if they were staying in a hotel. So I don't see this as being targeted or punitive. What I do see is that we have the opportunity to generate $1.1 million to help fund affordable housing. And as you know from previous testimony that I've made in the past, I'm a real proponent for affordable housing. I live in affordable housing. The testimony from the lovely lady sitting next to me really struck me. She shared her story about how at age 58 she lost her job, and so she and her husband is now renting out a room in her home. And she made the statement, if I couldn't do this, where would I go? Exactly. I had the exact same experience when I was 58 years old. I lost my job, but I also lost my home. And I lost my pension. And if it weren't for affordable housing, I'd be sleeping on the streets. We need to recognize what this is all about. And we're talking about $4. We need affordable housing. When I got into my unit 8 years ago, it took me 9 months to get in on the waiting list. It now takes people 3 to 4 years to get into the housing I'm in. On the waiting list. So I just want to say I really support this. And I also want to throw out another thought for people. I keep hearing people expressing concerns about all the homeless sleeping on our streets and the negative impact that it's having on tourism. If we can use this $1.1 million to house some of the people that are sleeping on our streets, it will have a positive effect on tourism. So think about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, would you like to bring staff up? Are there follow-up questions?
Yes.
Very good. And just for the record, we will get to the unreinforced masonry next. We'll probably take a two-minute break after this. We call it a compassion break. Commissioner Fritz, did you want to start, and then Commissioner Saltzman?
Thank you. Reference was made earlier about there's a requirement in the ordinance when we legalize short-term rentals that there would be notice to hosts with any changes. Is that correct?
There was a gentleman who testified about the administrative rulemaking process, which I have requirements in terms of public notice. That, however, is not the case with, obviously, city council action. There's a different track on which that notification took place. In this instance, we provided draft ordinances to the platforms themselves approximately 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago. We also provided a copy of the ordinances to host leadership on either June 1 or June 4. We're not quite sure when that was.
Over a week ago, yeah.
So those were courtesy advance copies of the ordinance.
Do we have the capacity to contact hosts who are registered to us?
Certainly, yes. We have their names and we have their addresses, the 20% that are registered. The other 80%, we don't know who they are.
But that wasn't considered as doing that?
Well, we did a fairly typical outreach for this sort of thing, which includes the major stakeholders. So, there's always an opportunity, I think, to do more, and we could do that in the future. But that was the process that we used for these ordinances.
And when you calculated the overall percentages and compared them between small hotels, large hotels, you didn't include the 12% that Airbnb charges or that other platforms charge?
No, those are private party transactions. We're not looking at that in terms of the burden. What we computed was the per night fee. And I think what many people lose track of is sales taxes. It was mentioned here earlier. We don't have a sales tax. In many jurisdictions, they do. So you may see a lower transient lodging tax rate, a hotel-motel tax rate, in a different jurisdiction that also has a sales tax that's applicable. So they're additive in those jurisdictions. And when you do those comparisons, it's important to take a look at the total all-in burden that a traveler has to pay, not just one element.
Yes, and what I heard from Rose and from Jennifer, Olivia, Anne, was comparison with the hotels. So the hotels don't have anything similar to the 12% surcharge, do they?
I don't know.
I'm not aware of hotels that advertise on online travel platforms that they have an additional fee that they're paying on top of that. That's not how that model works, to my knowledge.
Well, I know in Las Vegas, pretty much everywhere charges a resort fee as well that you can't get out of paying. But I don't.
I will say, if I could, there is now a kind of a scam with renting hotel rooms online. Where I went online the other day to rent a room at the Vagabond Inn in Los Angeles, where my daughter and I are going to visit, and it said I couldn't book a room, so it routed me by a phone call to the booking agent. It turned out to be a third party. And the third party said, oh, we have a great deal for you. We're going to get you a terrific rate. It was actually more than the rate I was locking in online. And then I realized I was paying a fee to a third party that didn't even disclose that it was not the hotel company.
Right.
That it was a third-party provider. So I would say you have to be extremely vigilant in getting these rates because these folks are very sophisticated.
A lot of the platforms, not just short-term rental, but the hotel, like Expedia and all of those, they have an amount for taxes and fees, and it's clumped together, and it's not really spelled out what's all in there. So that's going to have both the taxes charged by local or state governments, and there could be fees that platform is doing as well, but you just don't have information about what is all in that amount.
Thank you.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I want to thank everybody that testified. It's been very informative. And I guess I want to ask just a couple, I guess my issues center on fairness. And so keep your answers simple. Why are we doing a flat $4 a night fee and then a 2% TID fee? Why not a percentage for both? I mean, flat fees are regressive. So why don't we just do a percentage for both?
Well, so we have an opportunity to do that. I know that there are jurisdictions that are proposing a percentage. There are other jurisdictions that have implemented a per-night fee that Airbnb in particular is collecting. So I think there was just a level of prudence there in terms of making sure that we were proposing something that could actually be implemented. The other piece there is I think that our analysis showed that the $2, $4 price point was not material, generally not material to a traveler's decision. At $2 or $4, someone is not going to change their destination from Portland to some other city. The academic literature doesn't support that travelers are making decisions on the basis of whether or not they're paying an extra $2 or $4. And in fact,
You chose a flat fee of $4 because we really don't know how to do it on a percentage basis because we don't know what's being charged by the host?
Or? It can be done on a percentage basis. It certainly, we could implement it that way. But I'm not aware of anything that would bar that.
So, I mean, we
Didn't
don't...
you just tell me earlier that it was something to do with the charter that we can't do that?
It wouldn't be structured as a tax. It would be a fee. It wouldn't be a charter barring on that. So much like the TID, and that's the reason the TID is that it was set up as a 2% many years ago. So when we brought proposal to bring the SCRs into this TID structure, that's why the 2% there, because that's existing.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's lots of cities that have the model of charging a per-night fee to fund certain things. There are a number of cities around the country, and so that was when that was proposed. It was just following the models that other cities have done by doing a per-night, but it's not required.
So we could do a percentage as well. It's not because we lack information what hosts are charging. It's not, okay, that's what I wanted to clarify. And then I guess... Also, just on an equitable basis, you know, I can't, and if allowed, I would offer an amendment today to include hotels less than 50 rooms in the Tourism Improvement District. So I would make that amendment right now.
Second.
We have a motion and a second from Commissioner Saltzman.
Second.
and a third from the audience.
There we go.
Any further questions? Very good. So we have two.
Yes, I do have. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Questions on the motion, or we just that's now an amendment on the table.
So we have two amendments on the table,
and I have some questions.
Very good, Commissioner.
Of the current fees and charges that we levy, which are flat fees and which are percentages?
And by that you mean the transient.